Today on The Grave Talks, I continue the conversation with my nephew about conversations with his grandpa. Because you guys had this really strong connection, I think not many kids would it be advisable to take them to the hospital when someone's dying. And there was no place else you would have been. And and Colby and Kate, everybody, we were all at the hospital for a week. And, you know, everybody knew how this was going to end. You know, everybody, you guys were so sweet at the hospital, and you were so good, and you were really good about, like, keeping us kind of going. And I don't know, I look back on it, it was very traumatic, but it was very beautiful at the same time. I don't know how to describe it any other way. But I also get that you just wanted to talk to him, and you guys were just so close that there's not many seven-year-olds that would want to be there when their grandpa's going through all that. But you wanted to.
Oh, for sure.
That was your decision.
Yep. And it's
so interesting.
It is. It's just funny because I have those experiences, and, you know, you just try to, you know, look at those things as you get older as an adult and kind of try to figure out what was that all about. I've spent a good portion of my adulthood trying to
what was that
square some previous experiences. But that's one that just, and you know, you can talk to Colby, you can talk to anybody, like, you know, yeah, you can talk to my brother, you know,
Colby,
everybody remembers it.
Mm-hmm. Everybody,
you know, everybody, you know, and I am sure if I brought it up to him, if I called him up to talk to him about it right now, he'd be like, yeah, I don't know what that was all about. You know, like,
yeah.
He'd remember it clear as day. Because that was something that, I don't know, everybody also went through that experience with me as long as he was coming to visit. Like, that wasn't a secret in the family. Uh-uh. Everybody knew about that.
Uh-uh. Kathy would call me long distance back then because we had to pay money to make phone calls.
All the
long
way from distance. Colby to Wichita.
Yeah. Long distance. But Kathy would call me and she'd be like updating me on things that Dad said to you. Or she'd be like, you know, Chris just came to me a little bit ago and blah, 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 blah. And it was fascinating. It was weird. Fascinating, yet I don't know how to explain it. It wasn't scary at all. I found it very, I kind of wanted that connection for myself too.
Yeah,
so it was cool that you had it.
I mean, and it wasn't just like when I was upset about something, although, you know, that was the first time he came and visited me. But, like, you know, it could be something as just routine as I'm watching a Chicago Cubs game on WGN. Yeah, and he would want to watch part of the game with me. You know, there he would be. And it'd be like, all right, that's what we're doing. You know, like, so it was just even mundane things. You know, like, he's going to show up for dinner.
Did you see him as like he was solid?
Oh yeah.
So it was just like Grandpa was right there, Bozo.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, and it wasn't just like something like, you know, he was just like floating around the room or something weird like that. Like, I mean, he was there. Like, he'd go sit in chairs, you know, like he'd get up, he'd move around. He wouldn't just be like in one place. But I don't know. The different thing was that, like, You never understood when he would come or go, like how he did it, because he'd be there and then he'd be gone. Like, oh, okay. You know?
And then you wouldn't know the next time he's going to show back up.
No idea. So just kind of, you know, but it wasn't like just this like sudden startle thing like in the movies or anything like that.
Did you ever try to touch him or was that just like, no, I wouldn't.
I never tried to touch him.
Okay.
Like
they just knew not.
Like, yeah, like I never like reached out and, you know, thought like, I'll give him a good pat on the shoulder or something. You know, like we talked and we interacted. I never tried to like reach out and hug him or anything like that. Like, I don't know. Somehow that
you
just
knew that,
that seemed that wasn't a possibility.
Yeah. You kind of knew.
Yeah. And I don't know why.
Because it's interesting to me with you because you have a very science-based brain. Because of what you do. Do you feel other, have you felt other times in your life, you know, outside of all the lights going off in that one unit, have you felt things at other times in your life? Like in the restaurant, is that, so do you feel kind of like you're open to things?
Okay, so here's the thing. The answer to that is yes. I have felt things at other points in time, at other places. There's no straight line to that sort of thing. However, the thing is, and I repeat this in my mind when I specifically don't want to be creeped out, like, I will literally say, like, I really don't want to meet anybody. I don't want any sort of interaction. Like, I do not want that. And that has, I haven't ever met anybody I don't want to. I don't know that I have any say-so necessarily in anything like that, but it seems to me that if I'm not open to that sort of thing, it doesn't happen. Doesn't mean I don't sense something is off, or, you know, something's different here. But like, just for me, I would prefer not to have an experience in the basement in Iowa.
No, which is why I don't go down there.
And it's the only thing I'm focusing on while I'm taking the trash out. Seems to be something there with that, but.
Well, and that building, we have talked about it extensively on this show. I have felt that so strongly in that building so many times. It's like, not today. I don't want to see this. I don't want to experience it. So I have definitely done the same thing.
That's exactly it. And I don't know what the rules are, but I do know that at least for me, there has to be some sort of openness to it. Now, I've heard all sorts of stories, you know, about that hotel in like Colorado Springs, you know, where people see crazy things all the time. Aunt Carol, I choose specifically not to go to places like that. You know, that's not something enjoyable for me, something I want to seek out or do, you know.
Yeah.
However, sometimes you buy a house in Winfield that just has somebody there.
Oh my God. Okay, I have to say this. So Chris, I think Kathy and I have talked about this a couple of years ago on an episode or two. Chris buys this house. He and his wife buy this house in a town about 45 miles away from where I live before y'all moved to Oregon. So I go over there the first day, and before I go, Kathy's like, you know, call me when you leave. Let me know what you think about the house. So I go visit you guys, and I'm like, Kathy, I cannot spend the night in this house. Like, I don't think I could ever spend the night in this house. This house creeps me out so bad. There was this really heavy feeling in it. And I didn't want to be like, well, Chris, I don't want to come visit your house, but I didn't really. And, but you felt that too.
Well, yeah. You know, the funny thing is, like, for you, you got the feeling you didn't want to be there. But however, I used to tell Brittany, oh, the house is happy, you know, because we were making improvements and we were doing things on it. And I think the house was happy.
Yeah, I liked you guys.
The house became unhappy when we decided to move to Oregon. And, you know, that's when things started mysteriously crashing in the kitchen and things started happening. And, you know, so as I say, there's things like, don't go to a haunted house if you don't want an experience, you know?
Yeah, true.
And, you know, so you can go to places and you can experience things if that's what you choose to do. But for me, like, I would prefer not to go to those places. Thank you very much.
And you know, seriously, like, that house, if you know how you drive down the street, I talk about this all the time. You know, you drive down the street, you see a house and you're like, oh, that's a haunted house. You would not do that with that house. You would not have driven past it and thought that's a haunted house. Not for a minute.
No.
It did not appear to be one.
No, although, you know, like, and I have done this when I, you know, was driving back and forth between Colby, you know, visiting my father back in the day and going up to nursing school up in North Dakota. I did drive by the old house you all lived in Alma, Nebraska. And I'll tell you what, that's a haunted house. I don't even need to, you know, I don't even need to do any research. There's no sort of like specialty equipment I need to buy off the internet to go sense that, like, you couldn't pay me enough money to go inside that house. Like, because you all told the stories. So I went and drove by it one time. I'm like, well, you know, if I'm going to drive, you know, 14 hours today, might as well go take a peek, you know, like just swing by. I drove by in the street and I'm like, nope. And threw that thing right in drive and left it in the dust. It's like, that was one I'm not going to go see today.
Well, Chris, this was so interesting to get to do an episode with you.
Well, you know, my little bit or whatever, Mom has been after me for a little bit to come talk to you. And I'm like, I don't know if anybody wants to hear what I have to say. But
now, does it, your mom's sitting right there. Does she have anything to add about the Grandpa Bozo stories or anything?
You know, you'll have to ask her when she comes back in. She was going to check on Brittany and Charlotte. She could probably tell you what the experience was like as an adult having someone tell you about all these things.
Well, but that's what's interesting. We have talked about that a couple times over the years on this show. And, you know, does he remember it and all this? So it was really interesting to talk to you about all that. It's just, you know, and how clear it still is in your mind. That's very interesting, Chris.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I will tell you 100% sitting here today as an adult, that happened. He was there and it went on a very long time.
It did go on a very long time.
And it wasn't just like, oh, you know, some superficial thing. Like there was some sort of construct in my head that he was there just because I missed him so badly. And he only talked about things that I knew. Like he would talk about stuff that he would talk about things that he did. And then I'd tell Mom and that would creep her out even more.
Because it did happen. Like you should know it.
I shouldn't know those sorts of things. You know, that was something he was telling me and then I would relay it to Mom. And then she'd get really, you know, kind of that disconcerted look on her face, kind of the weirded out look, you know. And I'd be like, okay, maybe that was too much to share. But I wanted to talk to her about it. You know, like, I mean, it's you know, my grandpa is telling me this stuff, you know, like, need to share it with my mom. You know, she's like the most important person. You know, I got to go tell her about this stuff. So.
Well, and it was interesting because I do think there was things that he did share. So it was confirmation too, that it was a real experience you were having.
Oh yeah.
You know, there was no doubt about it.
Yeah. That was so interesting. Everybody knows. Everybody remembers that, you know, was around me at the time.
Yep. I mean, it's so true.
But anyways, well, I will turn it back over to Mom. I love you.
I love you so much. I was going to say my friend. You're not my friend. You're my nephew. Chris, I love you so much.
Well, I think both of those things are true.
You're one of my closest friends.
I think you are both my aunt and my friend. You know, that's... Both those things are true.
Yes,
at the same time.
That's very true. I love you so much.
I love you so much. And I will send you lots of pictures of Charlotte.
Please, like starting right now.
Okay.
Okay. Love you, Chris.
Love you, Aunt Carol.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I have anything to add to that conversation at all.
Well, I did have a question for you because you heard what he was saying about Dad. Do you have anything to add to that? I know we've talked about it on previous episodes, but it was an interesting experience, the way Chris would say things that he shouldn't know about things happening with Dad. And I remember like you would be calling.
Or things happening with us as, you know, kids, like your mom used to do da-da-da.
Which would be terrifying.
And then Chris would come in and say, Mom, did you do da-da-da when you were, you know, my age? And I'd say, yeah, sure. Why? Well, because Bozo was telling me this time that you did this and this and this, you know, or whatever. And it might even be something about me that he had no idea. Or I didn't even remember myself till he told me. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. And so that there were things that could oddly be verified.
Mm-hmm. And don't you think it's interesting that, you know, Chris is now 30-something.
He's 39.
39. I was going to say late 30s, but I couldn't remember. I think it's interesting that he still remembers it because so often we hear these stories about kids having experiences, but then they don't remember it.
No, Chris remembers it quite vividly.
He remembers it extremely vividly.
Yeah.
Because seriously, I've not really had, that's the first real conversation I've had with him about this as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know how he felt about it. Because I think he was a little weirded out for a while. Like, what was it? And so yeah. I'm like, I don't want to be bringing shit up, but it happened. I know that. Yeah. But I think it's so interesting that he remembers it and how Dad was so present as far as physically. It was just Dad sitting in a chair watching a Cubs game with him.
Yeah.
So like he and I were talking, I think it's, you know, so often kids are dismissed, you know, imaginary friends or whatever. But when your kid comes to you and they're telling you things from your dad that they shouldn't know, or how would they know? And you know, yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Or, you know, how do you know that? Well, because he's here.
Yeah.
And I went, what do you mean he's here? Yeah. He's in the room with us right now. Yeah. Yeah. He's just over there.
Like I was telling him about the time when we were at the cemetery and I felt, you know, it was like Dad touching the back of my head like he always did. And then Chris right then says, you know, Bozo's here. No, he goes, he's here. I go, who's here? Bozo. I'm like, oh my God, he is. Because I just felt him touching the back of my head. It was very strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and I just find
like you said, it went on for quite a while. You know, from my perspective of what happened, and I know we've discussed this before in the fact of how as a parent do you handle a child that's telling you these stories, for lack of a better word, just paranormal things that they're going through. And do you think, you know, is your first thought, there's something wrong with this child, I need to get them into a therapist, or, you know, all these things. But what happened was, and as you guys have heard from Chris's point of view, after my dad died, now, I don't remember it happening immediately.
No,
I remember
it took a little bit
of time before it started. Chris told me, when I talked to him, that it started immediately.
The way he just told the story, it did sound like that.
Yeah, but it was a while before I think I actually knew about it. And in some ways, I think it's because Chris, you know, it was his first experience with losing somebody, you know, that somebody he loved died. And so how do you handle that? How does that work? And I think at first, in all honesty, Chris was like 7 years old. He didn't know that you didn't see him.
Right.
After they die. He'd never lost anybody before. So this was kind of new. And the fact that he just showed up and talked to him for a while and would leave seemed like maybe that's the way it works. You know, I don't want to scare him. He's only 7 years old. I don't want him to think I don't believe him. And yet, does my child need therapy? But, you know, like Chris said that he would come and maybe just like be there just simply to be with Chris, like watch a ball game together. They big Cubs fans, you know. And so he said sometimes he'd look over and my dad would just be sitting there watching the ball game with him. And he said, and we'd talk about it. He'd say, what do you think of Andre Dawson today or whatever? He's, you know, 3-for-4 or whatever. You know, like they'd have this conversation.
You also didn't want to approach Chris like, this is weird. You've got to stop it. Because there was also this weird connection that you and I both really wanted with our dad.
Right.
Because we had just lost someone extremely important to us. And we seemed to have this little 7-year-old boy who was the go-between. And so it was, that was also a weird thing.
And it was, you know, it was really hard on me because it just was, you know, you lose your father and then your son says, oh, mom, you know, I just talked to him and he said, whatever, you know, I would have a hard time not bursting into tears, you know, as you can imagine, because it's really emotionally overwhelming. And then it just kind of
gradually, and I said, was he just gone? Like, do you remember thinking, I haven't seen Bozo, that's what he called him, for a while, you know, or I wish I could see Bozo or anything like that. And he said, well, maybe a little bit of both, but he said it just kind of gradually faded to where it seemed natural that he wasn't there anymore. It didn't seem wrong either. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I didn't want it to go away either, because then right. I lost something as well, but I didn't want to encourage it. So you walk this kind of weird fine line of, I don't want to encourage it so that he feels like he has to make up stories for me. You know, I want it to be the truth.
Right.
And so I would try my best to be, when he would tell me something, I would say, oh, okay. Well, how'd that go? Is he okay? You know, did he have any news? You know, or whatever. He'd say, well, he, you know, likes the new catcher we have or whatever. You know, I mean, it was usually just very
mundane stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was kind of weird, too, because I kind of felt like if he can come through to Chris, can he come through to me? Which I do think he did. I have things that happened that I really do feel like Dad was there in a way, but I didn't have that kind of profound experience. And I wanted that, you know, but then would I really be okay with seeing my dad walk in and watching a Cubs game with me? I don't know.
Yeah.
Then I would question myself. I think as a 7-year-old, he was able to accept it. And us at our age, that would have been, holy shit, you shouldn't be here.
Well, and, you know, at the time, I didn't want to push one way or another to say, are you really seeing him or is he transparent? Is he,
did you hear me ask him that?
Because I didn't.
Yeah, I did ask him.
I never did ask him until recently, until within the last couple of years.
And
when one night we were talking about it and I said, what was he like? Was he a ghost? And he goes, no, he was as real as you are sitting there.
That's
right
what
now.
Chris just said in his segment. And it was like, it was so weird because I always thought it was more ghostly, like kind of apparition-like. And he's like, it was grandpa. I woke up, grandpa sitting on my bed. Woke up, you know, I'm watching the game and grandpa walks in.
And he said he would always be able to kind of all of a sudden feel it.
And he'd smell look over the cigarettes.
Yeah, or he could sense the room had changed and he was there.
Yeah.
You know, but I, you know, I personally, when Dad died, you know, within probably the first 3 or 4 days, I had several things happen to me, like peripherally saw a person standing there. And then when I turned to look, they were gone. Mm-hmm. That happens to me quite a bit when somebody I'm close to died. I get these peripheral, almost shadow figures. Like I can see them walk. Like I remember looking down a hallway and I saw a person just walk from room to room across the hallway. And then when I got down there, there wasn't anybody there. And it was just really a black figure. It wasn't, I wouldn't say clothes, I wouldn't say anything. I would say more of a black whooshing figure that passed across the hall from room to room. See, I get more like that.
Mm-hmm.
But within, I would say, 4 or 5 days of Dad dying, it quit. And I would not say Chris had this experience with anyone else. And he, quite frankly, was very close to his other grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Very.
But I don't think that, I know it didn't happen with him.
And I know I've told you this before, but I'm saying it publicly now. I think you handled that in such a wonderful, accepting way for Chris, because I think there's a lot of people who would encounter something like that. Maybe someone who's listening has, to an extent anyway, or maybe it was an imaginary friend. But rather than dismiss it as that is not what you're seeing, it's not possible, grandpa died, you were just more open to letting him talk about it and having his experience. And I've always thought that was a really great way to handle that.
Well, I thank you. I don't know all the answers for sure in something like this.
This isn't one there's a book, a chapter, and a parenting book on.
There is not. There's nowhere to go, right, for something like this. But also, I would say in my making it a little bit easier for me as a parent was the fact that he would occasionally give me information that I knew could have only come from my dad.
Yeah.
So how are you going to question that? Plus, you know, he was at, like I said, he was at that age of his life where it was the first, he was very young and the first person, and I think one of the most impressionable ages for ghost sightings is that 5 to 7, you know, they're old enough to talk. They're just beginning to realize what reality is and yet not completely, right? So he had no preconceived idea of what death would mean.
He's just crying and he was upset and there wakes up and looks up and there's Grandpa.
Yeah.
It just was so interesting to talk to him about it, especially all these years later. You know, well, the fact that he still remembers it.
You know, thing too at that time was that when I was a kid, my dad would come in at night to say goodnight to me, and he would reach over and touch my leg. Like he would like squeeze my leg, you know, like on my calf or something. At that time too, one night I woke up and I felt like something different was in the room. I was by myself. I'm not sure where Greg was. And I felt that somebody squeezed my calf. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know. And then the next morning at breakfast, Colby, my older son, said, where did this thing happen to me, Mom, last night? He said, you know, somebody touched my leg.
I remember when that happened.
Yeah. And I hadn't said anything to him. And I just, so here's the thing. I think my dad was there.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see him. Colby couldn't see him, but Chris could see him. So, yeah. And Chris says, I said, well, was he there only when you, no. He said, he was there. You'd be there. He'd be standing beside you or behind you or wherever. You just couldn't see him. I could tell you couldn't see him.
It's just really, that was a really profound experience. But thank you very much, Kathy, for doing this. I just thought it'd be interesting to get your perspective after hearing Chris. So thank you so much. I love you.
Yeah, I love you too.
And that wraps up my conversation with my nephew and my sister about conversations with Grandpa. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and you can find everything there. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.